Any views, thoughts, or opinions expressed on the Rejuvenating Health podcast are solely that of the speakers and are intended as such. Please contact your trusted medical practitioner for medical advice. Let's go, girls.
Hey, ladies, welcome back to the Rejuvenating Health podcast. As always, I'm Shauna, and I'm here with women's health nurse practitioner, Lindsay Van Schoik. And today on the show, we have a special guest. We have Michelle Simmons, and she is an endurance coach. But the neat thing about Michelle is she chose to take a holistic approach on her endurance coaching. So we're super excited to have you here, Michelle.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Michelle Simmons. I'm a longtime endurance athlete. I've done triathlons for 25 years or so of all distances, all the way up to Ironman. I have been living in Hawaii for the last 19 years, and I'm a mom. I have a daughter who's about to turn 15. So she's just grown up here, and yeah, we live being in Hawaii is really great because it facilitates this outdoor life, like an active life that we lead. And, you know, like I was in the ocean swimming with my friends this morning, and it's a good place to live, especially if you want to be an endurance athlete.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I started my own coaching business 15 years ago, working mostly with triathletes at first. And then over the years, it's sort of morphed where I've helped athletes complete long channel swims and do ultra endurance runs, and gravel riding has become like a big thing, especially on the mainland. Athletes like to do that. So endurance training of all sorts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Is gravel riding just riding your bike on the gravel?
Right. Yeah. Well, what happens is riding your bike on the road is, you know, we have a lot of distracted drivers and And so they were we watch our friends get hit and injured by cars. And then we're like, you know what? Like, I'm getting older now and I have a family and I don't want to die. I'm going to go ahead and choose gravel instead where there's no cars. And I think the vibe of that endurance community is also really cool. Like, there are a bunch of cool people who, you know, we want to be around.
Yeah. So awesome. Talk to us about the shift. Like, how do you differentiate yourself from any endurance coach? Because there's lots of coaches out there, just like there's lots of different fitness coaches out there. So a lot of times you have to make yourself differentiated. And so talk to us about how you've done that for yourself.
Yeah, that's a good question. So, well, first of all, I've been doing this for 15 years. So one of the ways to differentiate yourself is to start and keep going, right? I've been doing it for long enough now that I feel like my consistency in the space has helped me a lot. And then, of course, because I've had 15 years experience, pick a thing and I have seen it with an athlete, right? And so I've my youngest athlete right now, I think is 26, and my oldest one is 72.
Oh, dang.
So
oh my goodness.
Pick an age span, right? And I've worked with that age span. My passion is studying physiology and understanding why our bodies act the way they do. And so when it's not just go out and mindlessly push yourself as hard as you can every time you go out and train. That it doesn't work that way. And so, I've spent a lot of time really trying to understand how does our body convert energy at different intensities? So if you're going easy, how does your body convert energy versus when you start pushing harder? How does that shift? What's the internal shift? How do we know when that's shifting? What kind of benefit do we get from pushing harder? And genuinely, part of my job, a big piece of my job, is holding athletes back and making them go easier, right? Because this whole no pain, no gain philosophy in our society that I'm going to go out, I have 1 hour and I'm going to push as hard as I can. And we're like, well, guess what? If you're already stressed out and you didn't sleep well last night, that's not the way. I think that, I know I pay really close attention to my athletes. I develop a good relationship with them. And then based off that, I can help them achieve their goals, whatever they are. And it's a relationship-based thing. And it stems from 15 years of my knowledge, learning how to help them be their best.
Yeah. that's interesting too, because we try to teach that to our like menopausal, perimenopausal clients, that pushing harder isn't always the answer, you know, and some of them want to go and do that longer Metcon workout, but it's like, no, because that's not what's best for you and your body in this stage mm-hmm. of life. So I think that's important to recognize too, even in your space, which is endurance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it can be. So like what I would say is like, you know, pushing hard is not bad.
Right.
It's good for us mm-hmm. sometimes to do. And then it's just a matter of like, in what context is mm-hmm. it good for us to do? And you say, well, okay, when I've gotten good sleep and when I'm fueling my body well, and when I'm not under a whole bunch of excess stress from all this other life stuff I've got going on, right? Like my body's in a place where it can absorb the work that I'm doing. So like in that space, you're like, okay, great. Go push hard today and then yeah. choose to recover, right? And mm-hmm. know what I did to myself. I pushed really hard. That stress was a good stress. And then now I'm going to balance that out by giving myself adequate recovery, resting, you know, and then waiting until I feel like, okay, now I'm ready to go again, instead of just this bullheaded, like, well, it's Thursday.
Like, right.
Yeah.
I'm going to go push hard no matter what.
So I feel like a lot of endurance type athletes are probably very type A. Like I mm-hmm. was an endurance athlete. Like I ran the Boston Marathon. I'm super type A. So if my training plan says I'm supposed to do this today, I'm not paying attention to how stressed out I am. But honestly, in those days too, us as women have no idea how stressed out we are. We're so not in tune with our stress levels and what is happening.
Yeah.
So how do you teach your athletes to do that? Like, how do you get them to be in tune with their stress levels to pay attention to that?
That is the part. And so, I mean, you asked before, like, how do I differentiate myself from other coaches? And I'm not saying there's no other coaches that do this. I have some peers that are really excellent coaches. That is the thing that I really try to focus and hone in on. So a couple ways that I teach this to athletes. We use a lot of data, right? So like I'm really big on mm-hmm. heart rate, and get to know your heart rate, get to know your morning heart rate. What is your morning resting heart rate? And I will tell you, like my athletes who jump on board that train and they get to know like, yep, here's what my morning resting heart rate is like, usually like between like 55 and 58, whatever. Like that's pretty standard. And then they'll wake up one day and be like, oh, my resting heart rate is 66. Like what's going on? Right. And then there's a little red flag that like something's different here. We also measure HRV, which I don't know if that's something that you guys do. Not everybody does. So what happens is when I learn of like a new metric or a new thing, right, that like we as humans can use to help ourselves, I study and learn everything that I can about that thing. And then I do everything I can to teach it to my group of athletes. So like maybe I have 25, 30 athletes. I can't force all of them to do the thing, right? But I can lead them in this direction and tell them why, like, hey, this matters. And so if you're watching HRV, let me help you understand what you're looking at and what those metrics are. And then because I have a good relationship with the athletes that I work with, we do a lot of then individual back and forth, like, hey, this is what my HRV was this morning. And then I give them permission. I'll be like, all right, you have one, sometimes two key workouts that are like the harder ones for the mm-hmm. week. And then the other days are going to be easy. So if you wake up and you see that like, oh, my HRV is in the gutter today and you had a key workout, like I educate them that your body's not ready to absorb that work. And so you're not going to benefit from it the way that you would if you did it on a day when your body's ready to absorb it. So we can use HRV to help us understand what day are we on. But I would also say that like the biggest thing about measuring HRV and keeping track of it is that it helps for the athlete that is astute will go like, huh, why is my HRV in the gutter today? Like, I don't know. Good mm-hmm. question. Let's mm-hmm. think about that, right? Like what sort of lifestyle modifications, you know, might you be able to make? Or like, oh, you drank three glasses of wine last night. That might be why your HRV is in the gutter overnight, right?
Could be that. You
know what I mean? Like there's lots of reasons. And so then it's like when you start tracking and you see that like I'm not very stable, oh, there's an opportunity here then to like, you know, button up some things in your life where you can make some changes. And then once you learn how to do that, oh, I went to bed early, I'm less stressed out. I mean, because initially when I got into learning about HRV, I was doing it under the premise that the training that we did was going to have a huge impact on HRV day to day. And then what I found when I started implementing this with myself and with my athletes is that, like, you know, it's not the training really that gets us, right? It's the, all the other stuff. It's the emotional stress. I had a fight with my husband last night. I didn't sleep well last night. I drank that alcohol, like whatever the thing is. That's what gets in the way. And so you're like, if you want to train hard and benefit from it, then like clean up that other stuff. And then your body's in a better position to absorb the hard work. But doing the hard work when you're in a gutter, all you're doing is digging holes.
I agree with that. There are some days where I'll rest and I'll be like, oh, my HRV and recovery should be like amazing. But that day was like crazy stressful. And I'll wake up and I'll be, my HRV and my recovery will be like in the toilet. And all the other days where I've done the hardest workout and I've recovered like a champ and I ate amazing and I went to bed and I had no stress. But I think, oh, my recovery should be pretty bad tomorrow. Like that was a really hard workout and it's like so good. So you're right. It really isn't the workout. Mm-hmm. It's the lifestyle and the stress and all the things that you do around it that matter the most.
Yeah. I mean, genuinely. So like what HRV is measuring is not the stress that you're applying to yourself. HRV is showing you your body's response to that stress. Right. So like if you respond well to stress, HRV is going to pop right up and you're going to be good to go. And then you're ready to accept more stress.
Yeah.
Right. But like when you're already at the edge, applying more stress from any source, right, like from training or from pick the other thing is not the way that we're going to optimize our health.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So a lot of our listeners are like, I mean, we don't have a lot of 20-year-old listeners. They're not really like, they can still eat what they want to do. And, you know, they're not suffering.
We're not cool enough for the 20-year-olds anymore.
We are. But a lot of our listeners,
we can't sit with them,
are starting to go through those hormonal changes. So I'm sure you've seen that with your athletes. How is that playing an impact on their ability to exercise or recover? Or what do they need to be paying attention to more as they are? Even if it's hormone related changes around their period or hormone related changes as they age. You've done 15 years of this and I know the science behind it, but sometimes it's good to hear the experience that someone else has in coaching those people through those different changes.
Totally. Well, I'll premise this by letting you know that I am 49 years old and I am like in the throes of this and have been for the last, you know, I don't know. It's hard to tell, right? Because like at least the last several years where I've noticed that like for a while, I would say when I was in my 30s and late 30s, even early 40s, I felt like I was reasonably predictable, right? Mm-hmm. Where like at least then when my monthly cycle would come, I would know, okay, I'm going to have these 3 days where I'm not going to feel that good. And then every month I would do some sort of like self-experimentation to say, okay, how do I minimize the effects of, you know, this hormonal time where just my mojo is in the gutter and I don't feel that good and I can't hit the power that I'm used to hitting. My heart rate's higher than it used to be. My breathing rate is higher. My sleep is impacted. And I found out during that time that, okay, if I really go out of my way to reduce stress, because this goes back to what we were talking about before, right? Like when I'm super stressed out, any other little thing is going to push me over the edge. Mm-hmm. And so when before I was in this perimenopause period, I just only had to worry about that really a couple days a month. And then at some point it starts to shift and you're like, huh, why am I feeling crappy in the middle of the month? Like I would be able to recognize like those symptoms of like, this feels like this hormonal swing of sorts today, but like, it's not time for that. It's not, you know, like this shouldn't be happening until like end of next week. So why am I today feeling, you know, just blah, and like my patience is short and I'm pissed off at the world or whatever.
Yeah.
The main difference really is that the predictability of, you know, when you're going to have your symptoms seems to go away.
Yeah.
And so then it's like, for a while, it becomes sort of like, I'm going to wake up every day and literally have no idea how I'm going to feel today. And that's a really challenging way to live if you let it get to your head. Right. Like if you decide for yourself, like, oh, I'm in this perimenopausal phase and it's super crappy and I never know how I'm going to feel. And so I guess I'm just going to feel terrible all the time. And that's it, right? And then you're focused on all the how crappy you feel. And that is super possible. I did that for a while, maybe a year, I don't know. And then I was like, hang on, like I've solved so many other problems for myself. There has to be a way, you know, to make this better for myself. And so then I really started doing my own research into, you know, hormones and like, how do I balance out my hormones? And the conclusion, and you guys are nurse practitioners, so like you could talk to this better than I could. And I would be really curious to hear like, what's your take on this? Like as a lay person who is very interested in physiology and going through this myself, my understanding is that like, okay, when I'm stressed out, my cortisol is high. And when my cortisol is high, everything else is whacked. Right. So like, that's when it just affects every other hormone. It affects the way I sleep. And then that affects everything else too. And so when I'm always looking for like the root cause of the problem, like how do I get to the root, which one is like really causing this? Cause if I attack that, then all the downstream sort of symptoms and feelings maybe fall in line. And, so yeah, I personally identified cortisol and insulin. Right. As like the two hormones that you would say, okay, if I want to optimize for those and I keep my cortisol under control and I keep my insulin under control. And with the cortisol, I'd say that feels more abstract because I'm not measuring cortisol. So like, I'm only just sort of guessing with that. And with the insulin too, I'd say, well, like I sort of guessing, but we can use a CGM. And I did use a CGM and I will share with you. I mean, I know there's like different sort of, like, there's conflicting ideas around CGM, right? And there's some people are like, if you don't have diabetes, like you shouldn't be using a CGM. And I'm like, well, I'm a human and I want to optimize my physiology and I would like to understand what's going on here. And so I'm going to wear the CGM for a couple weeks, not full time. I just like want to wear it for a couple weeks. Yeah. And see, and that was so enlightening. I was like, oh my gosh, like, okay. So that's how oatmeal affects me on a day that I don't exercise versus here's how oatmeal affects me on the day that I do exercise, right? And so, and how does it affect if I eat it 2 hours before versus 30 minutes before versus an hour after? And, you know, I'm experimenting with all that stuff and I just learned and I was like, oh, okay. So, I mean, I can't say that what works for me works for everyone, but what works for me is timing my carbs around the exercise. Like that has been huge in fixing tons of my like just hormonal.
Well, I mean, what's the main complaint that we hear about women in their 40s and 50s? They get this like belly fat, right? Like I get this belly fat. I don't know where it came from. Well, cortisol and insulin are your fat storing hormones. Like estrogen and progesterone aren't your fat storing hormones. Neither is testosterone, but insulin and cortisol are your fat storing hormones. So if you're not paying attention to those, and they're way off the charts, you're going to store belly fat. Now, estrogen does help with insulin sensitivity, but if you're controlling that with your diet and not eating like, and paying attention to what you're saying, and that's what we tell a lot of our clients, like if you're going to eat carbs, like you really need to put them around your workout because you're getting older and you're not as insulin sensitive as you were, and you're going to store that as fat if you're not putting it in the right places. Also, if you eat a bunch of carbs before bed, you're going to mess with your melatonin and you already have some sleep issues going on because you're perimenopausal and maybe having hot flashes. So yeah, I mean, all what you're saying is completely right.
It's good. It's interesting to hear that, you know, like from you, because I'm like, look, I'm not a practitioner, but I have figured this out, like just from my own experience. It's like, oh, okay. So like, and so genuinely, and this is the kind of thing I try to teach my athletes too. I use a concept called the workout window for like when you should be eating your carbs. Right. So like, and part of what I deal with too, is that there's some women who are deathly afraid of carbs, right? Like I'm not going to eat any carbs. And you're like, well, you're trying to be an endurance athlete. So like, if you don't want to be an endurance athlete and then you want to skip your carbs, like you're probably at a better place that way. But if you're going to go ask your body to do this physical work, and we know from physiology that the way that work is done, it's fueled by glucose. So like, and here's the other thing that I learned is that when I underfueled a longer, harder workout. So this is a mistake that I see women making all the time, is they think to themselves, I'm going to lose weight. So I'm not going to eat. And then the motivation and the determination is high in the morning, right? So I'm going to get up, I'm not going to eat breakfast, and I'm going to go do this high intensity workout.
The worst thing ever.
Fasted. Yeah. Right? So we're on the same page.
Fasted already. Training.
So I'm like, okay, so I wore the CGM and I saw what it did. Like, I cannot eat and go do a hard workout, and guess what happened to my glucose level? It's through the roof. Like, you know why? Because my body is smart and my body is trying to fuel the work that I'm asking it to do. And so it's going to dump all the glucose out of my liver. It's going to, you know, convert protein. It's going to break down muscle. It's going to do whatever it has to do to get the fuel. So, like, if we're not giving it the fuel, then we're hurting ourselves. And so, like, what I'm trying to teach women to do is to, like, work with your body. Be a teammate of your body. So, like, what does that mean? And it means pay attention to what am I asking my body to do? And how is my body going to convert energy? So this is the other thing. If you're going to get up and you're going to walk your dog for 30 minutes in the morning, like, do you need to eat a big bowl of oatmeal in order to fuel that work? Like, you don't, right? Like, that's a low intensity work. So it's not like any workout requires carbs. It's a matter of, like, okay, at what intensity level am I going to be working? And then when I'm going to do the hard workout, I'm aware of that. I'm going to fuel it properly before, during, and after. And then later on that evening, I can eat like a normal person. And what I see instead is that people will do they'll under fuel. They'll be like, oh, well, no, I ate carbs. I'm like, how many grams of carbs were in that little thing, you know, that you snacked on? They read the label, 17. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, you did it like a 90-minute workout. The 17 grams of carbs there was not enough to fuel that workout. And then what happens is later on that afternoon, that evening, they're just famished. their energy's in the gutter. And then they're like, well, wait a minute, I worked out for an hour and a half this morning. Like, I can have this pasta or I deserve this ice cream or I can eat this. And then they eat their carbs at night. And then they can't figure out, like, why I'm sleeping bad and why I'm gaining weight. I'm doing all this exercise. And so it's like, if you don't want to gain weight during exercise, understand this concept of the fueling window, an hour before, the whole time during, and an hour after your training. Prioritize your carbs during that time. The rest of the time, we're working on nutrients. You know, that's when you get your protein, nutrients. Yeah. Plant foods. That
kind of
thing.
For sure. I mean,
So like genuinely, like, I just preach that and I just say it over and over and over.
Every single woman I work with gets up and works out fasted and does these like crazy CrossFit or HIIT intense workouts. I'm like, oh, you are putting yourself in low energy availability right off the beginning of the day. No wonder your thyroid's trashed and no wonder your hormones are trashed and your period is wonky and you're having all these hormonal issues with menopause. Like, you're starting your day off terrible.
Yeah. But the thing is, their intention is good, right? You know, their intention is good. And it's like, okay, well, let's get some knowledge around this then, right? So we can do it and help ourselves.
What does social media tell us to do intermittent fasting? You go everywhere and it's like intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
So I always tell my
women, not us.
I tell my women, I'm like, that's great. If you want to intermittent fast, your eating window is 7 to 3. Do you really want to intermittent fast? Because I'm going to tell you, you can't eat after 3 p.m. They're like, what? Like 11 to 7 is not the window that you should be eating all of your food right before you go to bed.
Especially not if you're exercising in the morning. Like, that's when you're using the most energy. So it's like, give your body the energy that it needs when it needs it. And that would be the thing. So, like, for any woman that doesn't, like, if this, when these concepts feel abstract and a woman like can't wrap her head around it, in my experience, because what worked for me was like, well, let me start measuring it. Right? Like, I'm just going to start measuring. Like, I started measuring lactate during my training. So I know like how my body is responding. Like, how hard is that work? What is my lactate level? What is it at rest? What is it after easy training? What is it after hard training? And that helped me really differentiate the difference between easy intensity and harder intensity. And another thing that I've learned is that, I don't know if it's like an ego thing or what, but like our intensity meters are broken. So there'll be a woman to be like, oh no, it was just an easy run. And you're like, was it though? Like, your heart rate was over 160, you know, like, you thought it was easy in your mind, but your body's not interpreting that as easy. And that means your body is using glucose to fuel that. And we know that because your lactate is high at the end of the workout, and we can test that and see. And so with the idea being that when they start testing these things, right? So like, I'm going to test my lactate, I'm going to test my glucose levels. I'm going to track my HRV. And you see all of this in these numbers, and then you go, all right, okay, I see how that went. Let me try to experiment with doing things differently. And that would be either by fueling the training more if it's going to be hard, or lowering the intensity so that your easy is actually easy. Mm-hmm. When you get that part nailed down, then it's like the weight just falls off around your belly. Mm-hmm. Right? You're like, oh, that was cool. I didn't actually have to change how much I was eating. I needed to change the timing of it.
Yeah.
So
it reminds me of the saying, work smarter, not harder, right? So if we just take a little time to learn our bodies, learn what works, then we're not having to stress about it and work so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that huge mindset shift for a lot of women that,
it's 100%.
Hard. It's hard to do.
Hard to do. Because it's work to learn your body, right? I mean, it's work to learn new things and to understand your specific body, because everybody's different. So yeah, you just have to be willing to put in that work, and it pays off, obviously.
Right. Well, if you look at like, where's the pain point, right? You know what I mean? Like, what happens if you don't have time to learn your body, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're like, well, what happens is I've gained all this belly fat and I can't figure it out. So I'm going to try to starve myself even more, you know, and work out even harder, which is
make it worse,
backfiring, and I can't figure out why.
Yeah.
You know? You're like, well, I know why. And so, yeah, I do work with athletes in just every single week, you know, what did you eat on that workout? What did you eat before? What did you eat during? How are you sleeping? Because that's the other thing. Like, if you're not sleeping at night, then you're not giving your body this chance to like normalize and repair itself. And so then like all the rest of it is screwy too, right? Mm-hmm. So like miss out on a good night of sleep. And now like your hormonal, like the insulin and the cortisol is screwed the next day anyway. Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, where do I start? I need to prioritize the sleep first. Then I need to make sure that I'm fueling the workouts properly, depending on the intensity and the duration.
But in order to sleep, the choir.
Lindsay loves sleep.
I do. I love sleep. I will not miss out on sleep. But in order to get sleep,
same,
you have to get this stuff out of your head.
Right? Yeah. My mind is racing. I lay down at night and I can't stop because my mind is racing. You're like, oh, okay. Have you figured out like what works for you to make the mind quiet?
I do a lot of writing. You're an unlifted coach too. It's getting it out of your head.
Yeah.
Right. Story work. I don't have an issue getting it out of my head. Like, I'm a stressed out person, but normally it does not affect my sleep.
Oh, that's interesting.
I am also a stressed out person, but it does affect my sleep. Like my mind will race, or I'll wake up multiple times a night. So it does affect mine.
So what do you do?
If I'm, you know, overly stressed.
Yeah. How do you work on it?
Well, I do write as well. And then I've been trying to do a lot more breath work, even as I'm laying in bed. And I've noticed that that helps just calm. And then I've noticed myself just drifting off, you know, as I'm doing it. So that's helpful for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I found is that if I don't give my mind 10 minutes of quiet downtime at some point during the day, then it takes that downtime when I go lay down.
Yeah.
Right. And often if I wait until I'm laying down to do it, it will be longer than 10 minutes. I mean, it might be 2 or 3 hours of just like head spinning and racing. And I'm like, oh, okay. So then, and again, I'm the one that's like, let me experiment on this. And this is again, what I encourage my athletes to do too. Like experiment. What happens if for a week you decide that you're going to take 10 minutes at some point during the day and you're going to get real quiet with yourself and you're just going to like lay or sit down and you're just going to breathe and you're let your mind process whatever it wants to process. I'm not going to try to, you know, control this 10 minutes. I'm just going to lay here and breathe and see what happens. When I do that and I give myself downtime during the day, then when I go to sleep at night, it's so much easier to just drift off to sleep because it's like my mind is going, it's like our bodies where we talked before about, you know, with the glucose. It's like if I'm not giving my body glucose, my body's going to find the glucose from somewhere because it's going to do what it wants to do, whether I'm helping it or not. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like our mind is the same thing at night when we go to sleep. Like our mind is going to go through this process.
Yeah.
It's like, are we going to help it do that or not? And I have found that like I can help my mind do that earlier in the day. Then when it comes time to go to sleep, boom, I can sleep. Versus if I don't do that, well, my mind's still going to do it. And now I'm just missing out on sleep because of it.
Yeah. That's a good tip. Shauna, you need to try it.
That is a good tip. I will try it. I'll keep you posted. I'll message you on Mighty Networks.
Yeah,
let me know.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah, that is good. Yeah. Well, we typically have two questions. Do you want to do them, Lindsay? Or do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think this is like super great. My question is, if you have one piece of advice to tell our listeners, what would it be? It's a hard question.
That's a good one. Yeah, because there's so many. Like,
it's my
how do I narrow that down to one thing? So I just posted this today on Instagram, so it's very fresh in my mind. The idea being to act on purpose with purpose. And so when we think about, like, what does that really mean? And it means that, like, I'm aware and I'm paying attention to what I'm doing and why. Right. So like when I know what my goals are, right. So like my goal is to increase my endurance. Okay. Well, if I want to increase my endurance, what do I need to do in order to do that? So I'm going to act on purpose. Mm-hmm. I'm going to schedule longer workouts. I'm going to be training at the right intensity. I'm going to be fueling my thing properly. And I'm thinking through all of that acting on purpose. That is a much better way to manage your life than to just be like, I don't know what's going to happen today. I'm just going to put out fires wherever they come up and just do whatever I have to do. And I'll plow my way through. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can live like that. It's not ideal.
Yeah.
Versus like, I'm going to decide I'm in charge, right? Like I'm choosing that this is how I'm going to manage my day. And so like, and so with that, I mean, it's like, you could pick an area to apply that to. Like if I'm going to manage myself on purpose, and I'm like, I want to manage my ability to focus. Well, you know what? I'm not going to check email every 10 minutes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like I'll get to that email. Like I'm going to decide that I'm going to check email between 2 and 3 PM. And that's my hour to check email and respond to email. Now, like I have made that intention. I'm organizing my life that way. And so on purpose, I get to be more focused because I'm not going to allow those distractions to take over. So it literally is such a blanket, apply that in any area of your life you want, and it works.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. And it's a constant effort for that, right? Because as women, we're mm-hmm. so used to putting everybody else first. So we need to be intentional in what we're doing for ourselves. So I like that. That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now my question is a little more silly. So Michelle, if you could be one Disney princess, which Disney princess would you be?
Well, okay. My daughter's name is Moana.
Oh, I thought about Moana for you. I was going to say that. It was the Hawaii, like the ocean thing that got me from Moana.
Okay. So, you know, I have to tell this story. So what's funny is that, and she's 15. So she was like 6 or 7 when that movie came out.
Yeah.
I did not know that the movie was coming out. So yeah. I was like, I really want everyone to know that I didn't name my daughter after the Disney princess. They named the Disney princess after my daughter.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So Moana means calm ocean.
Okay. Huh.
And when I found out that I was pregnant, I'm an ocean swimmer and my husband is a surfer. And, you know, so we're both just like really in love with the ocean. And when I found out I was pregnant, I remember like walking toward the ocean, going to an ocean swim with some of my friends. And I just had this epiphany this is really early on. I mean, like I had just peed on the stick. And so I was like, if it's a girl, I'm going to name her Moana. And it just felt right. And then the whole time I was pregnant, I was like, I hope it's a girl because I'm going to name her Moana. So yeah, there's no question that Moana is my answer to that.
Cool. I love that. Yeah, that is cool. Yeah. And you wouldn't have, I was thinking when you said that her name was Moana, I was like, she said she was 15. So she couldn't have gotten that from the movie. That's neat.
No, that was before. I mean, and genuinely I named it because it means feminine ocean.
Yeah.
And a feminine ocean is like a calm, really nice ocean. It's what I swam in this morning and it's like my favorite place to be. So
yeah. Awesome. So tell the listeners where they can find you, social media, or if you have a website, and then we'll link them all below, for this episode, but can you just let them know where they can find you?
Yeah, sure thing. I'm mostly active on Instagram. Okay. It's Mama Simmons and it's at Mama Simmons, MAMA with an underscore SIMMONS again with an underscore. I'm also on Facebook as just Michelle Simmons, my name. I check that less often than I do Instagram. I used to have a website, but then I'm like, I don't know, do we even do websites anymore? So like I scrapped that.
Yeah.
So really, I'm easy to get a hold of on Instagram. I have set hours for myself, though, I'll tell you, in my desire to control like my time and attention, I set myself hours where I'm not on Instagram after 8 p.m. or before 7 a.m. Like my phone literally prevents me from doing it because I went in time for my, well, first of all, I did it for my daughter because I was like, I need to make sure that she's not like up at 2 a.m. on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And so I just went into hers, right? And I controlled it. So I'm like, it goes away for you at 8 o'clock. You don't have an option. And then, and she actually said to me, interesting, she said, thank you, Mom. Like it was helpful for her because she was feeling this like addictive pull to open up that app, you know, and to spend more time on that. She knew it wasn't appropriate. And then I was like, wait, I want to do this for myself too. And I did. And I tell you what, it's been one of the coolest changes I've made. Like literally 8 o'clock comes up and my phone's like, time to wind down.
Yeah.
Like you're not on social media anymore. I'm like, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to wind down now.
That is awesome. Yeah. Perfect. And we'll tag you too when the episode comes out so they can find you with that as well. But this was so awesome and we appreciate you coming.
This was a really good conversation. Yeah. I like talking to you ladies too. And like, confirm for me that like I'm on the right track here. Cause again, I'm not a medical professional, but I really feel like I've figured all this out just by
paying attention. I'm impressed. Yeah. You've done a lot. Good job.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So have a great rest of your day. And thank you again. We appreciate it. And ladies, we will catch you next time. See ya.
Bye.